Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 32.
So, where are we in the story? Tang Monk and the disciple, they've got Sun Wukong back.
Wukong's rejoined them, and they're heading west again. This is just after they rescued the princess in Boxang Kingdom.
Okay, and the scene starts quite peacefully, doesn't it? Springtime.
Yeah, lovely descriptions. You know, willows, blossoms, birdsong. Very idyllic.
But you just know that's not going to last. It feels like the calm before the storm.
Exactly. Because, boom, there it is. A huge mountain right in their path.
And Tang Monk, well, he reacts as you might expect. He's immediately worried.
Yep. Thinks about tigers, wolves, all the potential dangers lurking there. It's a very grounded fear.
Totally understandable. But then you've got Sun Wukong.
Wukong. Completely different story, isn't it? Just totally fearless.
And he brings up the Heart Sutra, doesn't he? What was the line again? Something about...
It's about having no hindrance in the mind. Because if there's no hindrance, there's no fear. You're far from deluded thoughts.
So he's immediately connecting this, like, physical mountain to Tang Monk's inner state.
Precisely.
Yeah.
He's basically saying the real obstacle isn't the mountain, it's the fear in your mind.
Right.
And he even adds that bit about... sweeping away the dirt in your mind and washing the dust from your ears. It's like saying you need to purify your perception first. And that other line, if you don't endure the hardest of hardships, you won't become a person above others.
So inner work is crucial for tackling these external challenges.
That's Wukong's perspective, yeah. It's all about the mindset.
But Tang Monk pushes back a bit, doesn't he? He kind of recounts the journey so far.
Yes, he talks about leaving the capital, Chang'an, visiting holy sites, seeing relics.
Remembering the sheer effort involved, all the rivers they've crossed, the mountains they've already climbed.
You can really feel his weariness. He just sounds exhausted and, frankly, longing for a break, for some peace.
Which is fair enough. It's been a brutal trip.
Absolutely. His focus is very much on the physical toll, the reality of the journey.
And Wukong's reply to that, it's almost a bit dismissive, but maybe practical.
Yeah, maybe practical is the right word. He essentially says, look, you'll get your rest, that feeling of stillness and emptiness, but only after the journey's done.
Okay. So achieve the goal first, then rest. You've got to push through.
You have to push through. Effort comes before the reward, basically.
So they start climbing, and... the description of the mountain, wow.
Oh, it's intense. Towering peaks, sharp summits, winding deep ravines, solitary steep cliffs. It sounds incredibly formidable.
Really paints a picture of just how difficult this is.
Mm-hmm. And the path itself sounds treacherous, described as being like ladders and benches in places.
And like crunches and pits and others. Not exactly a smooth trail.
No way. A text even mentions that, you know, ordinary folk, like people gathering herbs or cutting wood, would struggle or be in danger there.
And it's not just the terrain, right? There are wild animals everywhere.
Loads of them. Sheep, wild horses, rabbits, but also wolves and deer. It's a wild, untamed place.
It really drives home what a massive obstacle this mountain represents on their spiritual quest.
Definitely. There's that line questioning how they can possibly reach the goal, see the Buddha. If they're blocked by this, how can they ever reach Thunderclap Monastery?
So yeah, this whole section really highlights that tension, that contrast.
It does. Tang Monk's very human anxieties, his focus on the physical struggle.
Versus Wukong's focus on, like, mental resilience, overcoming the inner obstacles first.
Exactly. Spiritual resolve against earthly concern.
They run into a woodcutter. He's got this interesting description. Very simple clothes.
Right, like an old blue felt hat, a coarse robe, just what you'd expect for someone chopping wood.
Exactly, nothing fancy. But then the text says something interesting. It mentions he's actually, like, really content.
Detached from worldly stuff.
Right.
It uses that phrase, finding joy, forgetting troubles. It's a nice image.
It really is. But it also kind of sets something up, doesn't it?
Definitely. It shows how important messages, even warnings, can pop up from places you don't expect.
Right, because this chilled out woodcutter... he just stops chopping wood, looks at the Tang Monk, and basically says, hey, you going west, hold up a sec. Got something to tell you.
Yeah, and it's not good news.
Not at all. He says, this mountain, it's got a gang of really nasty demons, and they specialize in eating people heading west. Like, specifically them.
Oh, yeah.
And the poor Tang monk, the text says his soul practically flies out of his body. He's trembling so hard he can barely stay on his horse.
You can just picture it. Pure terror. Yeah. And it ramps up the stakes immediately for us, the readers, too.
Absolutely, because it's so direct. They eat people like you.
Understandably terrifying. You'd be scared, too.
So faced with this rather alarming news bulletin, who steps up.
It's got to be Wu Kong.
Of course, our Monkey King. And he does it with his usual, you know, confidence. Walks right over.
Mm-hmm.
Calls the woodcutter older brother. Kind of friendly, casual.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's respectful, but also Wu Kong taking charge, trying to build a rapport, maybe.
Could be. He's definitely assessing the situation. But his questions are sharp. He wants details.
Right. Like, how long have these demons been around? Are they old hands at this or just newbies?
Exactly. He's trying to figure out the threat level. And then he makes this pretty bold statement.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
He basically says, no problem. I'll just report them to the local gods, the mountain god, the earth spirit. Get them kicked out.
Huh. Just like that. File a complaint.
Pretty much. You can almost hear the woodcutter thinking, okay, buddy.
And he kind of does. He laughs, right? Calls Wukong a...
Dumb. A windy monk. I love that. What does that actually mean?
It suggests someone who's all talk, basically. Big talker, maybe not much action. He's definitely skeptical about Wukong's ability to handle these demons.
He's doubting the Monkey King. Bold move.
Well, Wukong doesn't take that lightly.
No way. He immediately launches into this whole explanation. Like, actually, I know exactly who to report them to.
Right, like there's a whole demonic bureaucracy. Celestial demons go to the Jade Emperor.
Earthly ones to the Earth Lord. Ghosts go somewhere else. It's surprisingly structured.
It really shows his background, you know, his time in the heavenly court. He knows the system.
And he's boasting a bit, too. I've got connections everywhere. I can get arrest warrants.
He sounds pretty sure of himself.
But the woodcutter, still not impressed.
No, he basically says, look, maybe your tricks work on little spirits, some minor ghosts.
Well, these guys, they're the real deal. Way out of your league, Windy Monk.
Ouch. It's great dialogue, though. It really builds the tension. We know Wukong's tough, but maybe this time is different.
Exactly. It plants that seed of doubt. And then the woodcutter gives them the crucial intel.
The names.
Yeah. The mountain is Pingding Mountain.
And the demons hang out.
Oh.
Lotus Cave.
Okay, so now they have specifics. But then it gets even more personal.
How so?
The woodcutter says the demons actually have descriptions. They're looking specifically for the Tang Monk. By name.
Whoa. They're actively hunting him.
Yeah. It's not just general danger anymore. It's targeted. Suddenly, you, the listener, identifying with the monk, feel that threat directly.
That definitely raises the stakes. So how does Wukong react to that? Finding out he's on a wanted poster, basically.
Well, his reaction is pure Wukong. It's kind of darkly funny.
Okay.
He asks the woodcutter, okay, so when they eat us, how do they do it? Head first, feet first.
Seriously?
Hey.
He's asking about the method.
Yeah. It's like he's accepted the possibility of being eaten, but he's concerned about the comfort level.
Wow. That's a one way to deal with fear, I guess. Deflection through morbid curiosity.
Maybe. It shows he's not really scared of dying, but maybe suffering. Or maybe he's just trying to stay in control with humor.
So what's the answer? How do they eat people?
The woodcutter says they just capture you, tie you up, and steam you.
Whole steamed monk. Lovely.
And Wukong's reaction to that, he just says... Oh, sounds a bit stuffy.
Stuffy. He's facing being steamed alive, and he calls it stuffy. You gotta love him.
His resilience, or maybe his denial, is amazing, but the woodcutter isn't giving up on trying to make them understand.
There's more.
Oh, yeah. This is the big one. He says these demons have 5 treasures. Incredible treasures.
Okay.
He uses these amazing comparisons that are like, jade pillars holding up the sky, golden beams supporting the sea.
Wow, so not just magic swords. These sound like cosmic level artifacts.
Exactly. These things are serious business. And the woodcutter warns Wukong directly.
What does he say?
He says, look, even with someone as powerful as you, you're going to have trouble. You'll need to have like several fainting spells to get through this.
Fainting spells? That's an interesting way to put it. He's saying it's going to be incredibly difficult or overwhelming even.
Yeah, it highlights that even the strongest can underestimate things, right? Especially if they're a bit cocky.
And Wukong is definitely confident, bordering on arrogant sometimes.
Totally. And what's his response to needing several fainting spells?
Let me guess. He brushes it off.
Completely. He says, fainting spells. Oh, we have those all the time. We probably have 700 or 800 a year. What's 3 or 4 more?
Oh, my God. It's peak Wukong confidence or maybe recklessness. He just doesn't seem to grasp the severity despite all these warnings.
Well, he grasps it but refuses to show fear.
Could be.
Thus.
So anyway, he seems completely unfazed. He turns to leave, tells the Tang monk, don't worry, master, just a few minor demons. Locals get scared easily.
Wow. After everything the woodcutter said.
Yep. So this really dire warning is just left hanging there. Okay, so they start walking again.
Yeah, but the woodcutter's gone.
Vanished. Poof. The Tang monk notices first. And Pigsy, he immediately jumps to, whoa, daytime ghost.
Ah, always the practical or maybe just superstitious one.
Right. But that gets Wukong thinking. Something's not right.
So he uses his special eyes.
Exactly. His fiery golden eyes, scans around, looks up into the clouds. And what does he see?
Not a woodcutter, I bet. Nope. He sees the real form. It's the day duty officer. A celestial official.
Whoa. So the woodcutter was a disguise.
The whole time. This random meeting wasn't random at all. It was a divine heads up.
That's a great twist. So Wukong must be pretty annoyed, right? Being sort of tricked.
Oh, he's furious. He flies up and confronts the guy. Hey, why didn't you just tell us who you were?
Good question. Why the disguise? The day duty officer explains. He confirms, yeah, these demons are super powerful. Lots of tricks, transformations.
Uh-huh.
So the disguise was probably necessary. Maybe to deliver the warning without causing a bigger celestial incident or revealing too much. A subtle nudge.
Makes sense. And his final message to Wukong is pretty chilling.
What is it?
He basically says, you have to protect your master. Be extremely careful. The whole journey to the West depends on it. If you mess this up, it could all fail.
Wow. Okay, so the stakes are officially cosmic now. It's not just about them, it's about the whole mission.
Exactly. And it's fascinating how the warning works, right? It comes through an ordinary guy.
But the source is divine. And Monkey, you know, he's the problem solver, always alert. He takes this warning seriously, but, and this is where it gets really interesting for me, instead of just running and telling the Tang monk, who he knows is, well, easily spooked.
Notoriously skittish, yeah. Right.
Monkey finds himself in a bit of a bind. He knows the danger is real, significant, but he also knows exactly how his master is likely to react.
Precisely. Monkey gets the monk's temperament. He knows laying out the full threat, all the scary details. That would probably just trigger total panic, despair even.
And potentially wreck the whole mission.
Exactly. So Monkey makes a calculated call. He holds back the complete truth from the monk.
Which really highlights something important about leadership, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Whether it's a real journey or just managing a complex project.
Understanding your team psychology, yeah.
Hmm.
Adapting how you communicate. It's a kind of information management, really.
He's basically thinking, if I tell him everything, he'll just fall apart. But Monkey doesn't just stay quiet. He decides on a kind of initial risk assessment.
Yeah, okay.
He thinks, and this is key, let's get Pigsy to go first. Let him clash with the monster, see what happens.
And what's so fascinating there is how many layers there are to Monkey's thinking. It's not entirely selfless, is it?
Not at all.
He figures, well, if Pigsy can somehow handle the demon, great. Problem solved, minimal effort for me.
Right. Easy win.
But if Pigsy fails, which is maybe more likely, then Monkey gets to swoop in, look heroic, show off his skills, and boost his own reputation.
It's very pragmatic, maybe even a little opportunistic.
Definitely a touch opportunistic. It's like testing one small piece of a complex system, you know? Find the weak spots before you commit everything.
It's such a classic Monkey move.
Yeah.
Using the resources you have, even if that resource is the somewhat unreliable Pigsy.
Chuckles. Indeed.
But he knows Pigsy probably won't be thrilled about this. He knows Pigsy talks a big game, but isn't exactly volunteering for danger.
Right.
So to get his plan going, Monkey needs a little strategy.
Yeah.
He resorts to a bit of emotional manipulation. He pretends to cry.
And Pigsy's reaction is just golden. Seeing Monkey, the guy who's usually so tough, so unbreakable, seemingly sobbing his heart out,
yeah,
it sends Pigsy into an immediate tailspin. Total panic. He turns straight to Sandy and comes out with this incredibly dramatic plan.
Oh, this is the best part.
He wants to divide up all their luggage right then and there, abandon the quest. He even suggests selling the white horse their transport to buy a coffin for the Tang monk.
It's amazing. His lines are just brilliant. Like, okay, let's split the gear.
Yeah.
You go back to your river and be a monster again. I'm going back to Gao Village and my wife. We sell the horse, buy a coffin for the master, and then we all just scatter. Forget going west.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate I quit moment when things look hard.
It really is, and it resonates, doesn't it? That urge we sometimes feel to just shut down when we're faced with too much information or a task seems impossible.
Totally.
And his reasoning is just pure fear of the unknown. He argues, oh, the mountain must be incredibly dangerous. The demons must be terrifyingly fierce. And weaklings like us, he says, we don't stand a chance.
That feeling of inadequacy, right? When you look at a huge field of knowledge or problem, that just seems way too big.
Exactly that feeling.
So, meanwhile, the Tang monk is just riding along, totally unaware of Monkey's little act and Pigsy's meltdown.
Completely oblivious.
He overhears Pigsy's outburst and is just confused. He scolds Pigsy first, calls him a blockhead for talking nonsense.
Standard monk reaction to Pigsy.
Pretty much. Yep. Then he looks at Monkey, sees this fake tears, and basically calls him out. Says something like, you're just putting on that crying face to scare me.
Yeah, the monk's skepticism there is interesting. It's that common reaction, isn't it? When you think someone might be exaggerating a threat, you kind of downplay it. Maybe to keep hope alive or just feel in control.
Could be. And his reaction also shows how much he relies on his disciples, especially Monkey. He can't quite believe someone as capable as Monkey would really be that obsessed.
He struggles with it. He tries to minimize the danger, hoping to reassure everyone, maybe himself included. But you can sense his own vulnerability underneath. He's uncertain, too.
And the monk does make a fair point. He reminds them how far they've already come.
Right. The progress.
We've already traveled halfway, something like that. He says, why are you even talking about turning back now? Remember how far you've already gotten.
Definitely. But Monkey, being a monkey, the master strategist, he cleverly twists the monk's words right back. His whole crying act was, and the text says this explicitly, a calculated move.
Deliberate.
Totally deliberate. Designed to provoke exactly that reaction from the monk, a plea to keep going. It's brilliant, maybe a bit manipulative, but brilliant.
Understanding people's buttons and pushing them just right.
Exactly. And then Monkey lays down his terms for getting past this mountain.
Okay, here come the conditions.
He tells the monk, look, Pigsy has to agree to do two specific things. If he does them, they've got a shot. Maybe a 3 out of 10 chance, he says.
Wow, not great odds.
No. And if Pigsy refuses, forget it. Might as well pack up. This neatly shifts the burden, or at least the perceived burden, right onto Pigsy. Pigsy basically asks Sun Wukong, okay, what's the plan? What do I do?
Yeah, straight to the point.
Yeah.
And Wukong gives him two options.
Right. Either look after their master, the Tang Monk, or go scout the mountain ahead. Seems simple, but not for Pigsy.
Oh, yeah, his complaints are amazing. About watching the monk, he basically whines, wait, watching the master means sitting still, right? But scouting means walking around. How can I do both? Sit a bit, walk a bit, walk a bit, sit a bit.
And Wukong clarifies, no, no, it's one or the other. And then Pigsy wants the full breakdown, you know. He says, tell me exactly what each job involves. I'm trying to weigh them up, I guess.
And Wukong's description of looking after the master.
Hmm.
It starts normally enough. Attend to his needs, help him physically, go beg for food.
Standard stuff for their journey, really. Carrying the load, making sure he eats. And Pigsy's reaction is just...
He lashes onto the begging part. He's not worried about the effort, or asking strangers for food. He paints this picture. What if the villagers see my big ears and long snout, think I'm a wild pig and, you know... chase me with pitchforks to butcher me.
He's worried the locals won't realize he's a holy pilgrim on a sacred quest. They'll just see him, this pig-like creature, wandering out of the woods.
They'll know.
And they'll mistake him for a wild boar and then, you know, capture him, cook him.
Preserve him for the winter. He says that, doesn't he?
He does. His description is so vivid, almost comical, being chased by villagers with pitchforks and brooms.
What if they think I'm just some wild mountain pig, he cries. A whole crowd comes after me, takes me home, slaughters me, cures me for New Year. Wouldn't that be awful?
Yeah.
You can just picture the panic. But then, okay, Wukong describes the second task, scouting the mountain.
And Pigsy's tune changes completely. He asks, okay, scouting, what does that involve?
Wukong explains, check out the path, see how many demons there are, what kind, get the names of the mountain, any caves. Just gather intel, standard reconnaissance.
And Pigsy's reaction.
Like, oh, that's easy. Simple. All his previous hesitation just vanishes. Poof.
Wow.
And his departure, it's just perfect. The description says he, like, flings his robes dramatically, lifts his big rake weapon high. Totally. Swaggering into the deep mountains, head held high, he strutted onto the main path. It's this huge, exaggerated show of bravery. Right. Zubaji gets sent to check the path for danger. Seems, well... pretty routine for their journey, doesn't it?
You think so.
But Monkey, Sun Wukong, he sees this And he can't help but snicker.
Sansang's reaction is so fast, he scolds Monkey almost instantly.
Yeah, he really lays into him, accuses him of, like, not having any brotherly feeling.
And even suggests Monkey wanted Pigsy to go, maybe hoping he'd fail or something. It says a lot about how Tang Sanzang views Monkey, maybe sees him as a bit of a troublemaker still.
It definitely shows some underlying tension. But what's really interesting is Monkey's explanation for why he left.
Right. He says it's not mean-spirited. He flat out predicts that Pigsy isn't actually going to do the job.
Yeah, he says Pigsy's just going to, like, find a place to hide, probably take a nap, and then completely fabricate a story about what he saw. So Monkey's certain this is what will happen. But Tang Sanzang, he seems, well, shocked. He questions how Monkey can be so sure.
Uh-huh.
But Monkey doesn't just, you know, laugh and complain. He actually has a plan.
Yeah, he suggests following Pigsy. Secretly, of course. Two things. One, there's a practical side. If there is a real demon, Monkey wants to be there to help. That's his job, after all.
Okay, fair enough.
The other part, wanting to see for himself. Is Pigsy genuinely trying on this pilgrimage? Or is he just, you know, going through the motions? It's almost like a little test.
A test of commitment. That makes sense. And Tang Sanzang actually agrees to this.
He does, but with a condition.
Which is almost funny, right?
Hmm.
He tells Monkey specifically, don't tease Pigsy.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's going to follow him, but obviously not just, like, walking behind him. He goes full stealth mode.
Yeah.
Transforms himself.
He does. Into a Lombor.
Which is what, like a tiny insect?
Exactly. And the description is just amazing. It talks about these thin wings catching the breeze effortlessly, a waist thin as a needle.
Wow.
Darting through reeds across flower shadows, faster than a shooting star. It's described as super small, almost silent, the kind of bug you'd just never spot.
Wow. So basically invisible.
Pretty much. The perfect disguise for observation, right? He can see everything without being seen, without influencing anything.
Smart. And where does he hide?
It's right up close, perches near Baji's ear, perfect listening post.
Huh. Okay. And does it take long for Wukong's suspicions to be confirmed?
Almost instantly. Baji walks maybe, what, 7 or 8 light? A couple of miles.
Yeah, not far.
And bam, throws down his rake, just gives up. Already. And then the complaining starts. He's not talking to anyone, but he's definitely aiming it at the master, Tang Sanzang.
Oh, yeah. What does he say?
Oh, the insults are great. He calls the master a Hiwa, basically a useless, weak old monk.
Ouch.
Then he calls Wukong Yi Kong Su, the pinching stable boy, that old insult about Wukong's job in heaven.
He went there. And what about Sandy?
Poor Sandy gets called the soft-faced sand monk. Just a quick little vent session, hitting all his companions.
Wow. So it's not just laziness. He's actually resentful, too.
Absolutely. You see his real feelings there. He feels put upon, underappreciated. His first thought isn't the mission. It's his own, you know, perceived hardship.
Speaks volumes, yeah. And his brilliant plan to deal with this hardship.
Oh, it's pure Baji. He literally says to himself, I know there might be demons, so I'll just make sure I avoid them.
Seriously. Avoid the whole point of the patrol.
Yep. He hasn't even gone halfway, and he's already planning to find a nice spot, have a sleep, and then just mumble something vague to the master later. Sleep.
Just sort of fudge the report.
Exactly. Just say, yeah, patrol the mountain, and that's that. Job done in his mind.
Amazing. The mental gymnastics.
It really is. And then he finds this nice patch of red grass, thinks, ah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Completely unaware, Wukong is listening to every word.
And the irony is, he even thinks, oh, not even Wukong gets to be this carefree.
Right. While Wukong is right there listening, the level of self-deception is just, well, it's funny.
Which naturally gives Wukong another idea.
Of course it does. He figures, okay, time for a bit more fun. He transforms again.
Into what this time?
A woodpecker.
A woodpecker.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet the description's just as vivid.
Oh, yeah. Sharp, red-tipped iron beak, bright green feathers, steel claws. Only weighs a couple of ounces, it says, but sounds quite formidable. Red copper beak, black iron feet.
Like a little feather drill.
Pretty much. And again, notice the choice of form. It's perfect, isn't it?
How so?
Well, first he was something tiny, easy to overlook for spying. Now he's something that naturally pecks things, gives him a built-in excuse for what he does next.
Which is, don't tell me.
Oh, yes. He flies down and pecks the sleeping Baji right on the lips.
And the lips? Ow.
Exactly. Baji leaps up, completely panicked, yelling, there's a monster. A monster,
I'm really bad.
says, it stabbed me. My mouth really hurts. He even sees blood and gets confused, wondering why he's got red marks when there's no happy occasion.
Poor guy. Utterly bewildered.
His reaction is just gold. He's so wrapped up in avoiding work, the idea of a real threat completely throws him. But then comes the best part. He sees the woodpecker flying off, and somehow, he convinces himself the bird mistook his mouth for rotten wood.
You're kidding. Rotten wood.
Yep. Full of bugs. He literally thinks, it didn't see me as a person, just thought my mouth was rotten wood with bugs, so it pecked me to get the bugs.
That is peak Baijiu logic right there. Unbelievable.
And his solution to this attack, he tucks his mouth into his robes for protection, then goes back to sleep.
The sheer commitment to napping. You'd think getting pecked on the lips might make you a bit more alert.
You would think, but nope, comfort wins. Of course, Wukong's not done yet.
Oh, no.
He comes back as the woodpecker, gives Baji another peck, this time near his ear.
Okay. Baji must be getting annoyed now.
He is. He's really frustrated, and his next deduction is maybe even wilder.
Wilder than being mistaken for rotten wood.
He decides the grassy slope must be the woodpecker's nest. And it's pecking him because it's protecting its eggs or chicks.
And thinks he's trying to steal its nest.
Le daranon. Afraid I'll take it, that's why it's bothering me. That's his reasoning. So finally, he gives up.
Fine. I won't sleep here.
He decides to actually leave.
Yeah, he gets up to, quote unquote, resume his patrol. Though, you know, we can guess how thorough that's going to be.
Probably just walk a bit further and find another spot.
And Wukong's reaction to all this.
Oh, he's loving it. The text says he was so happy, he laughed so hard, he almost fell over.
Can just picture him.
And his final thought about Baji is just perfect. This idiot, eyes wide open, still can't recognize his own family.
Resume his patrol? And what does Pigsy do when he finds a quiet spot? Does he scout? Nope. He sees three big stones.
And starts talking to them?
Starts rehearsing. He's practicing his report back to the group.
Wow. Okay, so the rocks are stand-ins. For who?
For Tang Monk, Sandy, and crucially, Monkey King himself.
Yeah.
He's literally practicing the story he's going to spin about finding demons.
You can almost picture him bowing to the rocks, trying to make it sound convincing. It really says something about Pigsy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That he's more worried about looking like he did the job.
Than actually doing it, yeah. And the lie itself is like, well, it's not exactly sophisticated.
Mm.
He decides he found demons on a stone mountain. In a stone cave.
Okay. A bit on the nose, maybe.
Right. It kind of highlights his simplicity, maybe. He knows he gets called foolish or dumb, and he desperately wants to sound competent this time.
And he really commits to the details in his rehearsal. It's not just any cave.
No. Stone mountain, stone cave, and the door.
Yes, the door.
Made of iron leaves. Nailed shut.
Oh, specific.
It's very. He even adds that the cave has three levels inside.
Three levels. He's really building a picture.
And he anticipates the follow-up question. You know, what about the nails on the door? How many?
Right. Monkey King would totally ask that.
Exactly. So Pigsy's pre-planned answer. Oh, I was too flustered to count.
Brilliant. Just brilliant. So the whole goal is just don't look dumb and maybe trick Monkey King, the beaming one.
Precisely.
Yeah.
All while Monkey King is listening to every single word from inside his ear.
Oh, man. What must Wukong be thinking? Just pure amusement.
I'd imagine so. It's like a private comedy show. Just for him, watching Pigsy tie himself in knots.
It's so perfectly Pigsy.
It is. Yep. And Monkey King, being, well, Monkey King sharp, quick, he doesn't even wait for the end of the rehearsal.
No.
Nope. He hears enough, figures out the whole scheme, and immediately flies back to Tang Monk.
Ready to spill the beans.
You got it. And that conversation back at camp is it's revealing, too.
How so?
Well, Tang Monk, ever the trusting master.
Bless his heart.
He just doesn't believe Monkey King. He basically says, come on, Pigsy, lie like that. He's not clever enough. You must be causing trouble again, Monkey.
Wow.
He wants to believe the best, sometimes to a fault. He struggles to see deceit.
But Monkey King knows better.
Oh, yeah. He's confident. He lays it all out. Tells Kang Monk how Pigsy was sleeping in the grass.
Not even trying to scout.
Got woken up by a woodpecker, apparently. Then bowed to the stones, rehearsed the whole lie. Stone mountain, stone cave, iron door. And then, right on cue.
Here comes Pigsy.
Here comes Pigsy, yeah. Still muttering the lines under his breath, trying to remember the details.
Oh, this is going to be good.
So Monkey King waits for the perfect moment and just calls out, Pigsy, what are you mumbling about?
Startles him, I bet.
Completely. Pigsy jumps, tries to cover, says, "Oh, nothing, we're here." Then he kneels down in front of Tang Monk, playing the part.
The diligent disciple returns.
And Tang Monk thanks him.
Ah. Oh.
"Thank you for your hard work, disciple."
And then Pigsy launches into the lie.
Oh, yeah. The full embellished version, he found a whole pile of demons.
Oh, pile.
Who called him Grandpa Pig, offered him a vegetarian feast, and promised safe passage with flags and drums.
He really went for it, more than he rehearsed.
He did. That's when Monkey King just cuts in, asking if Pigsy was maybe sleeping in the grass and dreaming all this.
Ouch. Direct hit.
Pigsy immediately denies it, very loudly, which, you know.
Kind of gives the game away.
Totally. Yeah. So then Monkey King starts the interrogation. Direct questions. What mountain?
And Pigsy says,
Stone Mountain.
Wet cave.
Stone cave.
What door?
Nailed iron leaf door. Just like he practiced.
He sticks to the script even now.
For a moment.
Yeah.
And then Monkey King says, okay, I know the rest.
Oh, the reveal.
Yeah. I know about the nails you didn't count because you were too flustered. And crucially, I know you planned this whole thing hoping to trick me.
And Pigsy's reaction, pure panic.
Absolute meltdown. Drops to his knees begging, Master, save me. His excuse.
Let me guess, Monkey King's staff.
Bingo.
Huh?
He was terrified of getting beaten with the staff. Claims even a light tap would shatter his bones, kill him instantly.
Yeah.
Total exaggeration.
Classic Pigsy deflection. So what does Tang Monk do? He knows Pigsy lied now.
Well, this is interesting too. Tang Monk acknowledges the lie.
Yeah.
Says Pigsy is definitely wrong. But then he asks Monkey King for leniency. He says essentially, look, he messed up, but we need him. We need the manpower to get through these mountains.
So practical considerations went out. What does that say about Tang Monk as a leader? Maybe not so naive after all, in a way.
It shows that tension, right, between his ideals, compassion, forgiveness, and the practical realities of their journey. He needs the team, flaws and all.
And Monkey King, does he buy it?
He agrees, grudgingly maybe, but he lets Pigsy off this time.
With a warning, I assume.
A very clear warning. No more dishonesty or else. It's forgiveness, but it's conditional, based purely on needing Pigsy for the quest.
Pigsy.
And he gets incredibly paranoid. He's convinced, absolutely convinced, that Wukong is just constantly transforming to trick him. It's quite funny, but also revealing.
It really is. Like, he sees a tiger, and his first thought isn't danger. It's
That's Wukong.
Yeah.
He immediately assumes it's his brother disciple messing with him.
And then a tree falls down, same reaction. Oh, Wukong's turned into wood now to hit me.
Or a crow. Just simple crow cawing.
Right. Must be Wukong, you know, adding insult to injury. It really paints a picture of his mindset, doesn't it? His guilt and fear just twisting everything.
It does. It's that internal state, the fear, the insecurity after the scolding getting projected outwards. He's seeing Wukong everywhere because he's sort of expecting trouble.
Yeah, expecting the worst from his brother. It's very human, that kind of anxiety making you see things that aren't there.
Absolutely. Mm. But while Pigsy's dealing with these imaginary threats.
There's a real threat brewing. Inside the Lotus Cave.
Mm-hmm. Golden Horn King and the Silver Horn King. They've apparently been taking it easy for, what, half a month?
Something like that, yeah. Lounging around. But now they decide it's finally time to, you know, patrol their own mountain.
And they have a very specific target in mind.
The Tang Monk.
Exactly. And the reason is, quite the motivation.
And immortality, right? The classic quest.
Yeah, but the belief here is very specific. They think Tang Monk is the reincarnation of this holy figure, the Golden Cicada. And because he's supposedly maintained his purity, his untainted essence over 10 lifetimes of cultivation.
Eating his flesh is the key, grants immortality.
That's the belief. Powerful stuff. The ultimate shortcut, they think.
Wow. Talk about a high-stakes meal plan. And Silverhorn isn't immediately convinced, is he?
No, he's a bit skeptical at first. But Goldenhorn King says he heard about it. Claims he picked up this intel when he was up in the heavenly realm.
But Goldenhorn is also careful. He's not just going on rumor alone for the capture.
He's practical. He actually has drawings, portraits of Tang Monk and all three disciples with their names written down.
Like demonic wanted posters.
Pretty much. To make absolutely sure they grab the right person and don't accidentally capture, say, Wukong, thinking he's the main prize.
Smart. So Silverhorn gets the drawings, the names, grabs 30 minor demons, and heads out.
And off he goes. Well, sending Pigsy ahead to scout, that's almost asking for trouble, isn't it? His nature.
Yeah.
He's bound to stumble into something.
You're so right. He's probably thinking about lunch, takes one wrong step, and bam, he's face to face with a whole group of not so friendly demons.
And their first line is pretty standard bad guy stuff. Where are you going, stranger?
Right. But it's Pigsy's immediate internal reaction that's so revealing, that quick panic.
That split-second calculation, yeah.
Yeah.
Where survival just kicks in over everything else, duty, bravery, whatever. It's basic instinct, really, though Pigsy takes it to a funny extreme.
Totally. He thinks, okay, if I say I'm a monk looking for scriptures, they'll nab me for sure. Better just say I'm passing through. It's that immediate jump to a lie, hoping denial works. And these demons, they're not exactly easily fooled.
No, not at all. The little minions report back, he's just passing by, but then some others recognize him. Or, well, they recognize his picture.
Right. And Pigsy's reaction when he sees his own mugshot, it's just perfect. He goes, ah, no wonder I've felt so drained lately. They transmitted my shadow spirit here. And the demon identification doesn't stop there. They point out Tang Monk on the horse, Sun Wukong, the hairy-faced one, and Pigsy. He's already hedging his bets, muttering prayers.
Oh, that prayer is gold. City got it. It'd be fine without me, too. Pig's head, three sacrificial animals, a pure offering. It's so specific and self-serving.
Totally transactional. Save me! And here's the invoice. Mm-hmm. It really lays bare his priorities.
Absolutely. It's all about him, him, him. Then the demons finally get to Sandy, the black and long one. And then, just to twist the knife, they point Pigsy out again. The one with the long snout and big ears. That feature he just can't hide.
It's the unavoidable truth of who he is right there on his face. And his reaction.
Literally tuck his snout into his robes.
The text says he panicked and stuffed his snout into his chest to hide it. And naturally, the demons aren't fooled. Not for a second. They just tell him, show your snout.
And his excuse, oh, it's a birth defect, can't extend it.
Huh. But the lead demon's had enough. Sends a minion to physically verify the snout situation. Pigsy finally gives up, reveals it, muttering about his small-time appearance. Game over.
Yep. The jig is up. Yeah. And the head demon doesn't mess around. Sword out. Straight for Pigsy.
But Pigsy isn't totally defenseless. He's got his weapon.
Right, the nine-pronged rake. That it's not just a farming tool. It's a serious piece of hardware. Part of his identity, too.
He blocks the attack. And then the demon makes that crack about him being halfway out of home. A little dig, implying he's not a real monk, wasn't one from the start.
A jab at his past, his commitment. How does Pigsy handle that?
Oh, classic Pigsy. Good son. Clever boy. How'd you know your old man was halfway out of home? But the demon clarifies, and his actual meaning is even worse. He thinks Pigsy stole the rake from a vegetable patch.
Ouch. The disrespect. From heavenly marshal to accused garden thief. That's gotta sting the ego.
It definitely does. And that's what finally gets Pigsy properly worked up. He launches into this, well, almost epic description of his rake. It's such a contrast to the scaredy pig moments before.
Yeah, it's a moment where his pride kicks in. Pride in the weapon, maybe pride in himself deep down.
Okay, listen to this description. Giant teeth cast like dragon claws, inlaid with gold resembling tiger shapes. When facing enemies, it scatters chilling wind. In combat, it generates flames. He goes on about how it clears obstacles, catches demons, obscures the sun and moon, knocks down mountains, scares tigers, flips the sea, startles dragons.
Wow.
Even if you demons have skills, one rake will leave nine bloody holes. But, you know, despite this amazing rake description, the actual fight is pretty even for a bit.
Yeah, the text says they go at it for about 20 rounds, no clear winner. Pigsy's fighting like a cornered animal now, desperate.
The description is wild. Gnawing his ears, spraying slimy drool, wielding the rake and shouting. It's not exactly elegant swordsmanship.
No, it's raw, messy, visceral. Someone fighting for their life. But it actually works. Kind of. The lead demon seems a bit freaked out by this chaotic style.
Enough to call for backup anyway. 30 smaller demons jump in.
And that changes everything. The classic overwhelm tactic. Pigsy's bravery or desperation just melts away against those odds.
Panic sets in. And his retreat, not exactly graceful, he trips on a vine.
A vine. Such a mundane end to his stand. And then a little demon tackles him and down he goes, headfirst into the mud like a dog eating muck.
What does that image tell you? That very undignified fall.
Brings him right back down to earth. Literally.
Yeah.
It just shows how moments of bravery or even powerful weapons can be totally undone by simple bad luck or just being outnumbered. Mm-hmm. It's humbling. And yeah, pretty funny too.
It is. And the capture itself is just as awkward. Grabbed by hair, ears, feet, tail, dragged off to the cave. The narrator ends the section saying, indeed, a body full of demonic nature is hard to eradicate, and myriad disasters are not easily dispelled.